Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. Now, I'm at MTN in Fairland today for a second recording with none other than MTN SA Chief Technology and Information Officer Giovanni Chiarelli. Regular listeners will remember the excellent discussion we had on this podcast with Giovanni last year about mobile technology. If you missed that one, I highly recommend going back into the archive and having a listen to it. Today, though, we're going to be narrowing the focus and talking specifically about something very exciting, and that's 5G. Giovanni, thank you for talking to Tech Central.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Duncan, for having me here today.
It's our pleasure. MTN has started a 5G trial. You introduced it, in fact, to the media last week, Monday. Many people, though, say that 5G is still several years away. Tell us a bit about the trial and why MTN decided to do it at this juncture.
Yeah, so we did the first live trial in Africa because we wanted to understand more about the new technology, really touching it with our hands. So we prepared it together with Ericsson, based on Ericsson radio technology and user devices. So we really wanted to see if some of the new features that are now in the standards are really providing the benefit that we are expecting.
Okay, so tell us a bit about the trial and what you managed to achieve.
Yeah, so in essence, we wanted to test a few use cases. Mm-hmm. One of them was mostly based on throughput. So the new technology is promising an uplift in terms of throughput or speed, if you prefer, of around 100 times compared to 4G. And in fact, we achieved more than 20 gigabit per second in terms of downlink throughput.
That's a remarkable 20 gigabits per second. I mean, that's roughly 20,000 megabits a second. The fastest fiber to the home connection in South Africa is 1 gig or 1,000 megabits a second. So we're talking 20 times faster than a fiber connection.
Correct. Exactly. This is the point. And in fact, if you look at the potential use cases, we really think that 5G could replace fiber in the last mile. So really the last part of the connection, for example, to the home or to the building, potentially can be replaced from fiber to radio 5G.
Yeah, and latency, of course, is also very good. It's also in the fiber sort of category. We're talking sub 5 millisecond ping times on these sort of connections, whereas what 4G is about 20 at best case.
Yeah, so exactly. So a very good 4G network with also fiber backhauling is around 20 millisecond or 20 to 30. In this case, in the trial, we achieved less than 5 milliseconds, but we know that in this case, the technology could provide even a latency below 1 millisecond. So, again, even more than comparable to fiber optic standards.
Right. Okay. So you've run the trial. It's finished now.
Yes.
You mentioned before we started recording that the equipment has been sent off to Europe for, you said, Mobile World Congress, which of course is coming up just a couple of weeks' time. But tell us about the trial that you ran here. You ran it at your head office. What were you hoping to learn from this deployment?
Yeah. So we ran the trial for some days. as I said before, first of all, to understand the limit of the technology, mm-hmm. and if the limit today is close to what is designed from the standards. But also we wanted then to stimulate internally our thinking about use cases. Mm. Yeah, it was an indoor testing. It was done in a wide area using a significant block of spectrum, so 800 megahertz in 15 gigahertz band. Obviously, we asked for temporary licenses from ICASA. They granted it at the end of December, so that's the reason why we did the trial in the week across the 8th of January.
Okay. You mentioned the potential applications of 5G. The speeds we're talking about here are mind-blowing. But do consumers really need these sort of speeds? I mean, what are the useful, practical applications of 5G once it starts to be introduced in a couple of years from now?
Yeah, so I think the question that everybody has in mind when you see a new technology coming on stage is what is the killer application? Yeah, we use this approach every time, and I think if you go back in time, it was quite easy to understand that 4G, the killer application was voice in mobility. And SMS. Also, SMS was a very, very good application. On 3G, it came clear that it was browsing, mailing, but also, for example, mobile broadband, so the first dongles for the PCs and laptops. Yeah, I think for 4G was a little bit more a discussion around killer application, and I think now probably is emerging as the video streaming in mobility. Mm. But it takes a while to really understand what is the killer application of 4G. And now we are in front of the same question. Yeah, what is, in reality, the business need, the consumer need or the customer need to introduce a new technology? So talking about that, I think it's easier to look at the features of 5G in comparison to 4G, and then to build on top of that and to see. So just to recap, we say, for example, in terms of capacity, 5G can provide 1,000 times capacity compared to 4G. Mm-hmm. And here, let me say, the logical consequence is we could lower the cost of transporting data. Yeah, as simple as it is, but as I was mentioning before, 5G requires an amount of a spectrum which is also one order of magnitude above the 4G. Then we were talking about speed, 100 times compared to 4G, and the application that I see is exactly the fiber look-alike mm-hmm. services. So in reality, something which is quite structural, which can really substitute and replace fiber optic in the last mile, with lower cost, faster time to deploy, less disruption on the civil works, and so on. But also there are other features that are coming out very, very, very clearly. So, for example, if we talk about the capability to connect devices per square kilometer, 4G, I think, can go maximum to 10,000 devices per square kilometer. Here, we can go to 1 million. Mm. Yeah? So it means that when we are talking about massive IoT sensors everywhere, especially in urban areas, probably the 10,000 devices is not enough, yeah, but 1 million is enough. So in reality, a real enablement to ideas that we are discussing in the industry and we are trialing in some way, like the smart city, but also the smart agriculture, are becoming possible, yeah, and maybe possible for the first time in reality. There is also the topic of the latency, as we said before, a latency that is moving from the 20 milliseconds to less than 1 millisecond. It means that real-time motion control is becoming possible. And again, the classical example is the smart car, the driverless car. I was discussing with the friends and colleagues in South Africa, and I also heard a little bit of skeptic voices around this, saying that this is not yet an application for South Africa. And I say, joking with them, let's park the smart car for a while. But think about real-time motion control maybe in difficult environmental conditions. For example, if you think about mining in some conditions may be very difficult to be sustainable from a human being perspective. So in this case, having the opportunity to control from a safe place a vehicle, it's providing great value. And through that also, step by step, you can think about, let me say, remote assistance to operators. Yeah. So, for example, if you have not enough skills to manage a particular situation, and you have somebody connected through mobile, in this case, remotely, that can provide guidance to people who are on the ground. Again, a new application that is becoming possible. And quite connected to this, there is also the reliability that is embedded in the standards. So when we are talking about 4G, there is the so-called 4x9 reliability, so 99.99%. In the 5G, there is one step ahead, so 5x9, so 99.999% of reliability. So it means that for the first time, through mobile, you can really have a critical services control. And then, obviously, you can imagine even futuristic scenarios like remote surgery and stuff like that.
Which is very dependent on that latency.
Absolutely. Number. From the latency, but also from the reliability. Mm-hmm. So you cannot have any discontinuity in the service. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So those are the, let me say, some of the things that digging a little bit into the 5G potential are coming out in this stage.
And so often you see in this industry, you deliver something, you're not sure what the application is going to be, but the end user finds an application to fill that network. We see it so often. What will people ever use 4G for? Now your 4G networks are being utilized very heavily. The other application that I thought was very interesting at the trial, and I think it was the Ericsson engineers who were demoing it, was the live sports application where you can do modeling in real time of players and action on the field and for broadcasting purposes, which I thought was quite fascinating as well.
Yeah, no, that was, let me say, in the booths that we created around, there was that one that you were mentioning. There was also another one really demonstrating the lower latency. So with just two wheels robot that was able to standing up, for example, there was one related to augmented reality, exactly in mining conditions.
Yes.
So in this case, assisting miners maybe in a dangerous situation to find easily the safe camera, the safe room, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So those are, let me say, some of the use cases that we are trying to develop.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot more at this year's Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. This is the first year where 5G is really going to be on display, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. I'm expecting more. And as we said, in reality, we had to stop this trial exactly because the devices were going to Barcelona already. So
yeah.
In some way, we are expecting to see even more use cases from Ericsson and its competitors.
Yes.
As well.
Okay. Let's get a little bit technical, if you don't mind. From a technical perspective, what is the difference between 4G and 5G, other than that 5G uses a different set of spectrum, much more spectrum, and it offers much, obviously offers much faster throughput and uses, I would imagine, clever technologies like MIMO, which was introduced on 4G. But what are some of the technical aspects of 5G that allows you to deliver these impressive speeds?
Yeah, so on one side, as you mentioned before, there is definitely a different allocation in terms of spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So more allocation for the spectrum, which, by the way, is creating for the current South African context probably even more questions. Other elements that are very, very peculiar of 5G compared to 4G is the way in which in essence the signal is spread compared to the cell. So in the previous technologies, at the end of the day, for example, using a comparison with the light, you were enlightening the entire cell, like an entire spot, yeah, in a very homogeneous way, no matter what, how many devices and where the devices were allocated inside of the cell. 5G has a new approach to this. So in reality, it's creating specific beams for each of the devices connected and is trying to follow also the devices inside the cell. So in this case, you really narrow that, light to the specific point where the device or the devices are. So that's the reason why you can have lower latency, higher throughput, better capacity, and so on and so forth.
So it literally follows you. The signal follows you.
The signal follows you inside the cell. Then, obviously, when you cross the border of the cell, the next one is taking care, but exactly with the same principle.
Okay. All right. So the 20 to 25 gigabits that you've achieved here during the trial, is that just the early stages? I know with 3G and then 4G, we saw the standards develop and the speeds become faster and faster. Is the same thing going to happen here? Is 20 gigabits just the starting point?
Potentially, yes. But I'm expecting something at the moment in the same order of magnitude. So difficult to think about something that is going to terabit per second today. So let's start from gigabit per second. Yeah, so I think this is the range.
In practice, though, I mean, the equipment vendors love to talk about the maximum potential speed of these networks, and the trial you ran here was obviously done in a controlled environment. In real world practice, once 5G is launched, what can consumers expect? Will they be able to get 20 gigabits a second, or are we looking at a lower rate than that?
Let me say, probably not the 20, but in the order of gigabit per second, yes. I would say yes.
Okay.
Like today, you see in the best 4G rollouts, when you have already carrier aggregation, you have 4x4 MIMO, for example, in general MIMO technology, you go to 100 of megabit per second.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm expecting at least a multiplication by 10 from a speed perspective in normal conditions.
Provided the operators can get the spectrum they need to do that.
Yes, that's crucial. Mm. That's crucial. So, you were talking about what are the enablers in terms of 5G. I would say that there are four enablers. The first one is really spectrum, yeah, and I'm repeating it like a broken disc, yeah, because there is a spectrum need below 1 gigahertz, mm-hmm. between 1 and 6 gigahertz, and above 6 gigahertz. So in all these three sets of spectrum is required an allocation if we want to develop a sustainable 5G technology.
Well, let's talk a bit about the spectrum issue, because South Africa's obviously got its own set of challenges with relation to spectrum. There's talk about creating a wholesale open access network and potentially not even licensing commercial operators with additional 4G spectrum. In fact, Vodacom, MTN and the others haven't specifically ever been allocated 4G spectrum, and you guys have had to reallocate your 2G and 3G spectrum to build out limited 4G infrastructure. Now we're already starting to talk about 5G, but you haven't got the 4G spectrum yet, and possibly may never get that spectrum if it's all allocated to the wholesale open access network. What sort of position does this put you in? I mean, without access to the spectrum and future spectrum, are you going to be able to deliver the sort of promises that this technology offers in future?
No, absolutely not. So this enabler, the spectrum, is crucial. I don't remember if we discussed last year together. As you can imagine, when I joined at the end of 2016 MTN South Africa, I went through a sort of induction phase, so asking to my team all the technical details and so on and so forth. And it was really day one. And I asked them, okay, provide me the chart of the spectrum allocation. Yeah, and they obviously put in front of me a diagram, and I said, okay, that's 2G and 3G spectrum allocation. Guys, where is the page of 4G spectrum allocation? And they said, no, you have not understood. Yeah, so 4G has to be allocated in the same blocks.
Yes.
Yeah, which is really unusual. And I think that's the reason why, in some way, we are even struggling with 4G. So I was talking about throughput of hundreds of megabit per second. This throughput can just be achieved in the current situation with an over-densification of the network, which is anti-economical. So you know better than me that allocating an additional band in terms of transmission on an existing site has a cost. Mm. If I have not this opportunity and I need to build the second site from scratch adjacent to the first one, this has 10, 20 times the cost, or even 100 in some conditions. So is really becoming unsustainable already in the short term. So we are in a situation in which the demand is, in terms of data, is growing exponentially. Yeah. So the other day in the presentation for the 5G, I was also disclosing some of the data regarding traffic growth. The 4G traffic grew, comparing December 16 to December 17 in our network, almost 130%. So this is putting us obviously under a huge pressure. Yeah, customers are more and more adopting LTE devices. Fantastic. The LTE device cost is lowering. Fantastic. The problem is that there will be very soon a time in which we are not able to provide them such a good performance, and we need to lower the performance in order to try to distribute as much as possible the existing capacity. And on top of that, there will be the strategic question to densify or over-densify the network or not, which is a big dilemma.
Big cost. You've already started doing that in some areas.
In practical terms, yes. Mm. So in what we used to say as the hotspots, so the areas in which there is already a very significant data demand, as you can imagine, top urban areas, very dense, there we are already over-densifying. Mm. And unfortunately, this is becoming sustainable just for very few areas in the country, but not for the rest.
Okay. From a technical perspective, I'd be interested to get your views on the Wholesale Open Access Network, or WOAN. Does it make sense from a technical perspective? Could you work with a wholesale operator to deploy a network, or does it make more sense for you to have your own dedicated chunk of spectrum to roll out infrastructure?
It makes a lot of sense to have the dedicated spectrum. And I am not the one saying that. So if you look at what is happening around the world, I think South Africa is the only case in which we are talking about a WOAN. So I think from this perspective, we should also learn from other experiences. And if there is an unanimous consensus around the spectrum allocated to operators, it means something.
Yes. If government forces it on you, though, from a technical perspective, can
you... It will be very complex. Yeah. It will be very complex, obviously, because you need to start talking about MOCN, which is obviously a way of sharing equipment, and so on and so forth. Today is sustaining, if I'm not wrong, a maximum of 6 operators in any case. So the question is, are we going for a WOAN in order to enable more operators? Mm. But there is a technical barrier to that in any case. So I think it's a very complex topic. It's not clear how, let me say, a new entity, which is the WOAN, can from scratch deploy sites very quickly and for the biggest operators in the country. Mm. So several questions, big questions to be answered, and they have to be answered also in a very pragmatic way.
Mm. So in terms of 5G, you've mentioned already that it's going to require big chunks of spectrum to do efficiently. Is there enough spectrum for all of the licensed operators to get access?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from theoretically, yes. Then we go back to the point of allocation. So. So, for example, one of the bands that today is considered a primary band for deploying 5G is the 3.5 gigahertz. Yeah. Then you have the bands above the 10 gigahertz, as we have demonstrated in the trial, and you should have also bands below 1 gigahertz. But then we go. Back to the spectrum crunch and so on and so forth. So ideally below 1 gigahertz you have the 900, which is traditionally GCM or UMTS.
Yeah.
You have the 800 that in many countries is allocated to LTE, and then or 700, and 700 could be for 5G. Yeah, but again, this is today just a dream for South Africa, sure. Unfortunately.
Of course, our TV broadcasting project is very delayed, and the 800 and 700 megahertz bands are used by, I think it's UHF, analog television broadcast.
Yes, correct. So there is the migration to the digital TV that has to happen in order to free up those bands. In general terms, however, if you want to talk about spectrum, and in this case we are going back to 4G, for example, there is 2600 megahertz. It's one of the, let me say, important bands, for example, for the 4G deployment. And this is available. This is free, but not allocated. So in this case, there is not even a huge mobilization in order to free up that spectrum, because there is another application today allocated on that. It's free, it's available, not allocated.
Something I was wondering about was whether, given how far we are down the line with the, or how far we're not down the line with the digital TV migration project, and that it may still be several years before that project is completed, and the fact that broadband technologies are enabling streaming and more people are turning to the internet for their entertainment needs, is there an argument to be made for television broadcasters to move out of radio frequency spectrum entirely and to use satellite technology to distribute to homes and free up everything that the television broadcasters are using below 1 gigahertz and reallocate all of that to broadband?
Yeah, it could be. And even you could think about the TV itself through broadband.
Yes. Yeah?
So in this case, you don't need even the satellite, but you really broadcast through, let me say, the broadband technology, even the live TV.
Is there an application? I mean, what bands does television use? I think it starts at, about 470?
Yes.
And then goes all the way up to 800 or so.
Correct.
Are those bands below 700 megahertz being identified for broadband, or are they reserved on a global basis for television?
No, in reality, you remember there were very old technologies from a radio perspective on those bands.
Yeah.
Today we are usually talking about something which is 700 or above.
Yes. Yeah. So freeing up 500, 600 wouldn't really benefit us at this point in time.
Not anymore. In terms of devices, I think... there is not anymore an availability. Yeah. So, in the old times, there were devices for 450, for example, megahertz. But that's at the beginning of the radio mobile.
Yes. So, if there's a global move to move television broadcasters out of those lower bands, then it might make sense for South Africa, because then the equipment would be available. But right now, globally, those bands will be used for television for the foreseeable future. So there's no sense in us abandoning digital migration.
Exactly. So at the end, the core of the discussion is the availability of 700 and 800 megahertz.
Okay. So you mentioned the wide range of frequencies that 5G is going to use. Now, we know that very high frequencies, those ones above 10 gigahertz, have characteristics that don't allow the signal to propagate particularly far from a base station, and also not to penetrate very well through walls into people's homes, into buildings and that sort of thing. So what is the ideal in the South African context? What's the ideal spectrum to start the deployment of a 5G network?
So I would say 3.5 gigahertz, definitely. Potentially 700. These are the two bands that I'm looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. And then for very dense and specific, for very dense areas and specific applications, you can talk about the 15 or 20, 26 megahertz, gigahertz, that today, for example, are for the point to multipoint technology for radio links and so on. So. So it can also enter in that space.
More of a fixed wireless solution at
correct,
the high end.
Maybe and then for enterprise, small businesses, these specific type of services.
Okay. And then you use 3.5 gigahertz for the very dense urban areas.
Correct.
And then ideally below 1 gigahertz, exactly. 700 megahertz for rural.
For the coverage, the wide coverage in the non-dense areas.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is this 5G network going to look like? Are we, especially if you're using higher frequencies, are you going to be deploying a mini base station on every street pole, basically? Or is it more going to be the model that we see now with a large base station with a generator attached to it and all that sort of thing?
Correct. In this case, probably you scale down from an infrastructure perspective. As you know, we are moving also to different shapes of antennas, so those squared antennas that are, let me say, today very look very different from the existing ones. So this is the layout that was also in the live trial. Yeah, so there were four sets of MIMO squared antennas, and by the way, if you look at the radio. Apart from this, the radio looks very similar to the existing 4G radio. So you have a remote unit that looks exactly like a 4G remote unit. You have already a baseband very, very similar to the existing one. So from this perspective, I go back to what we were discussing before in terms of components of the 5G. So we discussed about spectrum. The second component is radio. And the radio at the moment is the most advanced, also because the standards are most advanced. Then the other element is the core network, and the core network will go for a full virtualization. Yeah. So today we are already talking about virtualization of the network, which means in practical terms, the same standards that we have developed for many years in IT are going to network. So a network is already, in many cases, running on commercial hardware, so the usual servers. And as we did for IT, those servers are now step-by-step first virtualized and then potentially moved to the cloud. Yeah, obviously, yes. It will be a private cloud. It's not a public cloud. But in essence, all the core network is following exactly the same evolution that the IT infrastructure has done in the last 5 years. Yeah.
So what does that mean in practice? What are we going to be? I had a fascinating discussion about this actually with Andile Haber a couple of months ago down in Cape Town, and he was very excited about network function virtualization of the mobile network and what it would mean for accessing infrastructure services on demand in a cloud type of environment. Just talk us through what that might mean for businesses and for consumers in the future.
Yeah, so I think from my perspective, the biggest element is the flexibility in terms of capacity that you can allocate. So as any solution in the cloud, clearly you can increase the capacity very quickly or decrease the capacity. So it is becoming definitely more efficient, but also more effective in order to answer to the customer demand. So that's one element. The second one, I think it will create a totally different ecosystem, because in reality, the network itself will become an application on top of a middleware and on top of a fully cloudified infrastructure. So it means that even, let me say, new players with great ideas might maybe not enough in terms of R&D funds could develop in the future network applications for the core network. So I think the ecosystem in some way will move from few big players who have to invest massively in research and development of products or components, let me say in this case better, to potentially an ecosystem in which you have also small startups or mid-sized companies with very few brilliant engineers to cover some of these components and develop them without the huge machine behind.
Are we moving to a world then, Giovanni, where at the moment, for example, we go to Microsoft to buy cloud capacity in their Azure data centers, or I'd go to Amazon for a similar sort of service. Then plenty of others, Google, others offering these sort of services. In future, will I go to Amazon or Microsoft and rent network capacity from MTN indirectly, where you have a partnership with Amazon or Microsoft, and I buy that capacity through those cloud providers?
I don't think it's possible for the network side.
Mm-hmm.
So in some way, it will be a very similar architecture, but it will be a private cloud. I think in terms of security features, I think there are still some question marks that have to be fixed.
Okay.
So the private cloud environment is by far more controllable than a public cloud.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you look at the architecture, it's very similar.
Okay. Let's talk about the rollout of 5G in South Africa. We've spoken about the barrier of spectrum. Let's put that to one side and assume that you get the spectrum that you need. There's still other barriers that have to be overcome. One of them is the availability of handsets to connect to 5G. I know ZTE said, I think it was at CES in Las Vegas last week or the week before, that they hope to have a 5G device in the market, if not later this year, then certainly early next year. When are these devices going to be generally available? Let's assume the spectrum issues are not a problem.
Yeah.
When would I be able to get a 5G smartphone, and what would it look like?
Yeah, so exactly, these are the four components. So when we are mentioning about the road to 5G, I said before, spectrum is one, radio technology is the second, core network is the third one, and the fourth is exactly handsets and devices. So as we have seen in the live trial, let me say, they are the most immature. Yeah.
Yeah.
You are seeing those big cubes. But in reality, if you think about the evolution of technology, and I was sharing with some colleagues, some of us had similar experiences. Exactly, it was around 2007. So 10, 11 years ago, when we were talking about the first 3G live trials, user devices were looking exactly like that, so big cubes. And then we saw that in a couple of years, it ended up in what we know today. So I think there are two elements now in this readiness for the handsets. One is the chipset readiness. So as you know, Intel is actively working on that. Qualcomm, for example, is actively working on that. Other players are also working on that. Intel chipset will be trialed in a Verizon fixed mobile substitution scenario very soon. For Qualcomm, we are expecting in any case that by the end of this year, the handset manufacturers will have the chipset available, which means that in 2019 we will see progressively the first 5G handsets available. For what we see today, you were asking to me if they look different. I don't think they will look. They look very, very differently from the.
They're not going to be much bigger.
No, obviously in this case, market will not adopt.
Mm.
Yeah, and also thinking about the current commercial trials. The first one that was announced is this with Verizon in US. In this case, you don't need to go to such a small size of device because we are talking about a fixed mobile substitution device, so a router equivalent.
Yes.
In terms of size. So, okay, if it's like a DVR in a house, it's not a problem.
Mm.
Yeah, but for what we know in terms of smartphones, I think end of next year, probably is the moment in which we see the first ones. The other big question is, what is the cost?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because this is another barrier. Maybe in terms of usability and user experience, they will look fine, but if the cost is prohibitive, again, it will take a while in order to lower it down and then to trigger a significant adoption.
When do you think we'll see it in the first mainstream device, like an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy?
As I told you, I think early 2020 probably.
Okay.
This is
2 years away.
Yeah, a couple of years. In essence, let me say, having, as we said before, standards that will be crystallized along the year 2018, and then even a single year before going live, I think is a quite stringent time frame. Yeah, but in essence, this is quite aligned also to what we were saying 1 year ago or 2 years ago. So probably 2020 or 2021, maximum 2022. This is the year of 5G. We will also see what is happening in the Winter Olympic Games.
In Korea.
Because the South Koreans have announced that they will show us 5G, a little bit more prudent. The Japanese said some Olympic Games in the summer of 2020, where I think it will be definitely more realistic.
Yes, yes.
Showcase.
Will they have handsets for that Olympic Games?
For the South Korean one, I have no idea. I'm really curious to see.
Perhaps Samsung and LG.
Obviously, like you say, they have two big names working for them. Mm. I'm sure that they will try to, show off significantly. Yeah.
And these handsets, I presume, will also have to have 4G, 3G, 2G support.
Absolutely. You remember we discussed the previous time the struggle in which we are as an industry, in which we continuously provide services that are almost 20 years ago, at the same time trying to push for the latest and the newest. And looking at other industries, so it's really difficult to understand. If you think about automotive, the factories are just producing the newest and latest models. Yeah, they don't produce any more 20 or 10 years ago models. No worries. Vice versa, in terms of our industry, the factory is the network, and in this case, the factory is still producing 20 years old products and 10 years old products and the latest ones, so 4G. And we are talking about the future with 5G as well. So the question of really shutting down some of the existing technologies probably will become even more important in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. I remember last time we spoke, you I think you were talking in your personal capacity rather than an MTN capacity, but you said that you may prefer to switch off 3G than 2G.
Yeah, that's my personal view, and several times when I share it, I see a lot of skepticism around. But definitely, I think, especially if you have services based on 2G, like the very old machine-to-machine devices, or if you have areas in the country in which you have still a significant voice on 2G, obviously you cannot switch off 2G. So 3G was the entry point of data experience and data services, so I think it's easier to move customers from 3G to 4G rather than customers from 2G to 3G. This is my personal view. Obviously, the opposite is 2G has to stop and everything and everybody has to migrate to 3G. Again, looking at examples around the world, we know what is happening in US. They're shutting down 2G. In China, they are China Mobile shutting down 3G, for example. Yeah. So, again, we'll learn more and more from these real cases in order then to develop a strategy.
Okay. Before I let you go, Giovanni, just maybe take us through the cost implications of 5G. Is this going to be a cheaper or more expensive or relatively the same cost technology to deploy in the South African context?
Yeah. In isolation, I think it will be cheaper, but obviously we are in a very early stage. So we really need to see, first of all, how the business case for 5G looks like. So today we have no answer to that. Usually the adoption of a new technology has a quite horrible business case. So we really need to see.
Okay, and that will determine the speed of your
rollout. And as usual, there is always a positive circle between customer need, customer demand, and the new technology rollout.
Yeah. And as with previous generations, this is urban first, then spreading from there to rural areas down the line.
Unless you are thinking about a very specific projects. Okay. I was talking about mining previously. Mm-hmm. Okay. In this case, if you think about a rollout in a mine or in a set of mines, obviously, this is, different, totally different from urban versus rural approach. Mm. Yeah.
Great. Giovanni Chiarelli is CTIO at MTN South Africa. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central.
Thank you, Duncan. As usual, a pleasure.